Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in the Dharma is Nun Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learning Zecha Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We're on the mission on the very bottom. The Amud Anodim and Achalav. A person makes a neder from Chalav. He says that he's not going to have milk anymore, and he makes the affirms that commitment through a neder. Maybe he's lactose intolerant, but I'm only guessing and speculating. Whatever the case may be, mutabakum, he's allowed to eat the kum. The Ran over here explains, as number is shown, with the word kum is a reference to the way. The Ran writes, Hainu mai mayotim enacholav, it's the water that comes from the milk. When the milk is separated into the fat, into the whatever's left, so that generally speaking what we describe as whey. So even though you made a neder from chalav, but you can't eat milk, drink milk, but you're allowed to consume the whey, Rav Yossi Oster. And Rav Yossi prohibits. Rav Yossi feels that the whey is a product of milk, and therefore, just like your neder encompasses and incorporates the milk, it also is going to incorporate the whey as well. Minakum. Well, let's say a person decides that he's just not going to have whey anymore. He had it once; it didn't appeal to him. So mutabachalos, so he's allowed to eat. He's allowed to drink milk. And on this point, Rav Yossi does not disagree. So now, please keep in mind, as we've mentioned time and again, and it just bears repeating because it's one of the fundamental rules as it relates to the Nedarim. When it comes to Neder, we're not saying that whey is not a byproduct of milk. Of course, whey is a byproduct of milk. It's just a question of when a person says the word chalav, what is included in that? In other words, again, when it comes to Nedarim, holecha chaloshim b'nei adam, we follow what, generally speaking, is the way people understand language. And so, when generally speaking, when a person says milk, does he mean to say milk meaning what we commonly refer to as milk? Or is he referring to even the part that we call whey? That's really what the debate amounts to in the Mishnah. Although, as you'll see in the Gemara is going to take a moment to get to that point. But that's again one of the fundamental points that we keep repeating again and again. If that's the fundamental point, so then it bears explaining what's the machlokus between the Tanakam and Rav Yossi. Okay, it bears explaining, and shortly enough in the Gemara, we're going to explain that as well. Abishal Omer Hanodim and Agvina. Abishal is of the opinion that you make an neder and you say, that's it, no more cheese for me. Asur ba bein malucha u bein tfeila. Right, we don't have the word bein. The Ran certainly had that word. You can't eat cheese, whether it's salted cheese or whether it's unsalted cheese. Either way, you can't eat cheese. And even though you said the word hagavina, the cheese, remember just yesterday's daf, we articulated that when you add the letter hey in front, that's an article, that's a definitive article. And generally speaking, that makes your neder much more specific. But in this case, when we talk about cheese, even the word hagavina is a reference to either salted or unsalted cheese. Hanodim ben abasa, if a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat meat anymore, okay, so he swears off meat. Decides to embrace a vegetarian life. So again, this is a neder. Okay, and I know I keep hammering this point because it's really important, it's fundamental. Without understanding that this is a neder, you will not understand the rest of the Mishnah. Hanodim Nabasa, let's say a person makes a neder that he's not going to have meat anymore, muta barotiv of a kippah. You can have the sauce that comes out of a meat. I'm not talking about barbecue sauce, I'm talking about gravy. So muta barotiv of a kippah, and you can even have kippah. Kippah, after you cook meat, you're going to have a little bit of residue meat on the bottom of the pan. Right? It's delicious, by the way. I highly recommend it. You'll love it. So the Mishnah says that's fine. Because again, what you meant in your neder when you said buster is you're talking about a substantial piece of meat. If it's sauce, if it's gravy, if it's just a little bit of meat residue on the bottom of the pan, that's fine.
Correct.
In the world of Isser and Heter, in the world of Basar Bechalav, there's no argument. You're absolutely right. It's meat. But again, we're in the world of Nedarim. When it comes to the world of Nedarim, the definition of his neder is how it's generally understood. Basar is generally understood as a significant, as a substantial piece of meat. I know it's funny. It sounds strange.
It's not
like
a matter of size.
I know it's funny. Last night, I with the 9 days coming up ahead, so last night I treated myself to hamburger. Even if the 9 days weren't coming up, I'd still treat myself to hamburger. hamburger. I was thinking. I know it's funny a lot eating the hamburger, but I was thinking about the Mishnah, meaning a hamburger is really just kippah. It's just, you know, pieces of meat, and they're put together and they're reconstituted. And to be honest with you, it was delicious. But I know it's funny. In other words, does that mean that had I made a neder, which is just an absurdity, but had I made a neder about not eating meat, would that mean that I could eat the hamburger? That sounds strange. I know it sounds funny. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the hamburger is just too, you know, that for sure. If someone's vegetarian, he's not eating it. But again, we're not talking about Issa Behet, we're not talking about Basar B'Chalav, we're talking about Nedarim. Okay, I'm with you. I know it sounds strange. I, you know, was wondering while I was eating the hamburger last night. Can I do that? Okay, but anyway, that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says Mutar b'kippah, rotav b'kippah. Rav Yehuda Oser. Now Rav Yehuda on this point disagrees. He says you're not allowed to. Now in our Mishnah we have the words Rav Yehuda Oser. It could be it's Rabbi Yossi. Either way, it's gonna amount to the same point. It's either Rabbi Huda or it's Rabbi Yossi. Either way, so Amar Rabbi Huda Maisa, the Asar Lena Rabbi Tarfon beBeitim Shnis Mashlu Imo. So Rabbi Huda says, look, I want to support this position that if you make a neder against meat, you can't have the gravy, you can't have the little pieces of meat in the bottom of the pan. And he says, and look, I'll tell you, I'm right about this because there was an episode, there was an incident with Rabbi Tarfon, and somebody made a neder. We have either the Girsa Asar Alayna or Asar Alay, and it means that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who made the neder. Okay, either way, I'm nitpicking a little too much over here, but Rabbi Yehuda Asar, I'm sorry, Rabbi Tarfon, the Asar Alayna or Rabbi Tarfon bebeit mishnis bashlu imo. What happened? There were eggs that were in the, I guess we can call it the cholent pot, either way. In other words, we were cooking meat, and we were cooking egg in the same pot. And you ever see an egg coming out of the cholent pot? So it's, you know, it's even with the shell around it, you know, it absorbs all that deliciousness. And because I made a neder against meat, so Rabbi Tarfon said, I can't have the egg that was cooked in the meat pot. So Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm going to support this viewpoint. So Amru Lo, so they say to him, now remember, the Tanakhama disagrees. Tanakhama says that if you made a neder against meat, the gravy's fine, the little bits of meat are fine. So Amru Lo, Kena Davar. So they say back to Rabbi Yehuda, you're right, but you're wrong. Meaning, I'm not disagreeing with the episode with Rabbi Tarfon, and Rabbi Tarfon's psak is correct. But you, this is a chachamim saying to Rabbi Yehuda, you didn't understand the full context of what happened over there. Amos ibez manche she'amar basar ze alai. In that case over there, he wasn't speaking in the generic, I'm not eating meat. What he said was, see that piece of meat over there? I'm not eating that piece of meat. For whatever reason, that piece of meat is also to me through a neder. Now, when he identifies that piece of meat, so you know what that piece of meat now is like? It's like a piece of hektish. It's like something which is consecrated, which is absolutely off limits. Because we know that if you make a neder, not against the generic, but against something extraordinarily specific, if you make a neder against that, so then that's going to be prohibited. And furthermore, if that gets mixed up with anything else, im yesh benosin tam, as long as it delivers taste into the other food, asur. So then it's going to be prohibited. So this is the Tanakhama's response to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, you're right and you're wrong. You think that if a person makes a neder against meat, so he can't have the gravy and he can't have the little bits of meat. You're wrong. You're right about Rabbi Tarfon, but Rabbi Tarfon's case was not a generic neder against meat, but it was a specific neder against that particular piece of meat. So once that particular piece of meat becomes prohibited, and that meat now gets plopped into a pot, and it infuses its taste into anything else in the pot, so then that taste is going to be prohibited as well. A principle we know throughout Shas and Gemara and Chulin discusses this. It's called Tam Ke'ikr, that the taste of a food is like the essential food itself. That's why in that case it's going to be prohibited. But we disagree with your conclusion. If a person made a generic neder against not eating meat, so that neder is only going on a substantial piece of meat. the gravy, the little bits, are going to be fine. Okay. A person makes a neder against wine. Now again, the generic neder. I'm not drinking wine. Now he's not pointing to any particular bottle. He just simply says wine. So what is included in that neder? Only actual wine, meaning the consumption of wine by itself. But let's say something is cooked with wine. For the Baal HaNeder, for the one who made the Neder, that'd be fine. So, Batal Shashiesh Bo Tam Yayin. Even if it had the taste of wine, that's not included in his Neder, because again, the generic Neder against wine assumes that he's only prohibiting himself drinking straight wine. Amar Konim Yayin Zeh. And now again, we're going to articulate the same point. Let's say he says, I'm not drinking that wine. Particular bottle right in front of him, he points to it and he says, I'm not drinking that wine. So Shani Toim, Venafel Atafshel, and then that wine falls into a pot. Imyesh Babano St. Thomas, as long as that wine is infusing taste to the rest of the pot, Hareza Asr, so it's going to be prohibited. The entire dish is going to be prohibited because his neder was, again, not on the generic wine, but on one specific bottle. That wine is going to be asr, and anytime that wine infuses taste into anything else, the tarovis is going to be asr as well. Adkan divrei ha-mishnah. You probably noticed that I finished the daf, and I did it, I mean the yamud, and I did it in a relatively short time. Now, in fairness to me, that was a very short daf. Okay. The Ran over here speaks extensively. I'm going to speak out the one point of the Ran that he makes. It's a there are a couple of Rans. We've talked about this before. The Ran, a commentary to the Masechta. We don't have Rashi. We have a version of Rashi, but it's not Rashi. It's a Rishon who took the place of Rashi. But generally speaking, as we've been doing throughout the Masechta now, we've been learning the Ran. The Ran has a couple of what we would call popular comments that he makes throughout the Masechta. Popular because, you know, generally speaking, you know, even before you open the Masechta and learn it, you've been in yeshiva long enough, you learn long enough, you've heard a number of these Rans being quoted. Today's one of those days where this is one of the more popular Rans that's discussed throughout the Mishnah. Because we have a little bit of time this morning, so we're going to go through some of it inside. So let's start off with a question in the Ran. But before we ask the question, let me just introduce the topic with some basics. So like the next 10 or 15 minutes, we're going to involve ourselves in the halachas of tarovus, of mixtures, and let's go over what we already know, and then we'll go through a question and answer in the Ran. Generally speaking, when I have a tarovus, when I have a mixture of foods that are kosher and non-kosher, so what is the rule of thumb? It's very simple. As long as you have a majority of it that's kosher, and a minority of it that's not kosher, so then we say bittul, then we say nullification. Okay, so if I have a number of hot dogs getting mixed up with one another, and one of them is not kosher, and the other, let's say two of them are kosher, and they get mixed up together, so we have a concept called bittul. So that means that the one that's not kosher gets nullified, assuming that I can't taste the difference between the three hot dogs, so then we have bittul. Does that mean I can eat all three hot dogs? So I know no one's going to want to, it's hard to even suggest it, but it's the halacha. The halacha is, you can eat all three. Now, can you eat all three at the same time? So that's all right. That's already now a discussion, which not going to have right now. But in other words, that's a basic concept regarding the topic of bittul. That if it's the example that I gave of hot dogs. Let's say I cook something non-kosher into something that which is kosher. So let's say milk and meat. So let's say a little bit of milk goes into a pot. And what's the halacha then? So once again, here it's the majority is not going to help you. Because if the milk infuses taste into the pot, even though there's a lot more meat than there is milk, but if the milk infuses the taste into the pot, so then obviously you're going to have prohibition. You're going to have iser. That's called basa b'chalav. So at what point is everything going to be okay? As long as the ratio of milk that falls into the pot is such that there's no infusion of taste. How do you know there was no infusion of taste? So according to the Gemara, you simply hand the dish over to a non-Jew and you say to him, would you mind tasting this for me? Why do you want me to taste it? Just taste it for me. Okay, understood that that's always going to be strange and awkward, and there are trust issues, which the commentators of the Shulchan Aruch point out. But what is the rule of thumb? It's a very simple rule of thumb, and everyone knows it. Echad b'shishim. As long as the ratio of milk that falls into the meat is less than 1 in 60, so then there's a safe assumption that there was no infusion of taste. Good. Again, these are all basics. This is things we already know. When it comes to tarofas, when it comes to mixtures, so we have generally two different categories of mixtures. We have min b'mino and min b'sheino mino. When I have a mixture of like foods and I have a mixture of dissimilar tastes. In a classic example of dissimilar taste, so that's the perfect example I just gave. That's meat and milk. In other words, if the milk falls into the meat pot, obviously milk and meat taste differently. And so therefore, when we have a dissimilar taste falling one into another, so again, as long as there was no infusion of taste, as long as there was no nesinas tam, so then everything would be fine. Once there's an infusion of taste, so then no, it's no good, then it's bas b'chalav. What if it's min b'mino? What if the tastes are similar? So let's say, for example, I'm cooking a cholent, and every piece of meat I throw in there is kosher, except for one piece of meat. One piece of meat that I threw in there, for whatever reason, was not kosher. Okay, so now, and all the meats look the same. But now I threw it into a pot, and now the tastes all infused into one another. So what's the halacha over there by min b'mino? So as we know, well, I don't know if we know, but we're going to go over right now. That's a machlokas. That's a machlokas between Tanayim, whether or not we're going to say bit on such a scenario. Rabbi Yehuda's of the opinion that min b'mino ain't obato, that when it comes to similar tastes that get combined together, so there is no bittul, and the Chachamim disagree. And where does the halacha stand on this issue? We go like the Chachamim. There is an opinion of Rashi that says that Rashi feels that the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda, but we don't hold like Rav Yehuda, we hold like the halacha falls like the Chachamim. That even such a scenario, there's going to be bittul. Okay. And again, that was just ABCs. That was just simply the basics. Sometimes there's what's called bittul blocking. Okay, it's a term that I came up with. You don't have to love it, but bittul blocking is basically there are times where the Chachamim stepped in. The Chachamim said, you know what? Even though there should be bittul, but for various reasons, we're gonna block bittul. The Gemara in the beginning of Beitza, Masechta Beitza, goes over a number of different reasons why the Chachamim blocked bittul. And if the Chachamim blocked bittul, that means that there's no bittul that's going to occur. One of the bittul blockers out there is what's called the principle of what's called Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin basically means like this. And again, that also is expressed in the beginning of Masechta Beitza. That if I have, for example, Isser and Heter. If I have two foods, one's prohibited and the other is not prohibited, and they get mixed together. And let's say there's a preponderance of the Heter, of the kosher food, that gets mixed in, but the non-kosher food, although it's not kosher right now, it will become kosher. If that's the kind of mixture that I have, this is what's called Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. Something that will become permitted, and because it's a Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, so consequently there's not going to be any bittul. Simple example, the beginning of Masechta Beitza, the Gemara gives the example of an egg. Let's say an egg was laid on Yontif. An egg laid on Yontif is prohibited. And that one egg gets mixed in with 2 other eggs, 100 other eggs, 1,000 other eggs. Doesn't matter what the numbers are. So the halacha is that all those eggs are going to be prohibited. One non-kosher egg, non-kosher meaning because it was laid on Yontif, and there's an issue of nolad. One non-kosher egg gets mixed in with 100 or 1,000 other eggs, and there's not going to be bittul. Why should that be? The answer is because wait till tomorrow. Meaning today on Yontif, it's usher. But tomorrow, it's no longer usher. Nolad is only going to be usher on Yontif, not tomorrow. So, Rashi Masechta Beitza says, Asher tochlena be'isser tochlena be'heter. Look, let's not eat it today because today one of those eggs is usher. I know there's a concept of bittul, but how about this? Let's just wait one day. All we need to do is wait one day. And instead of eating a possible isser today, tomorrow everything's going to be mutter. This principle is what's called Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, and that blocks bittul. Okay. And again, everything I said is just basics, meaning it's just the ABCs. And with all that stated as an introduction, so now we can look at the Ran, and we can take a look at the Ran, who asks over here in our Gemara a fundamental question. What did our Gemara express? That if there was a piece of meat, and that meat is also to me, but why? Because of a neder that I made, and I expressly said that I'm not going to eat that piece of meat or wine, and I say I'm not going to drink that wine. So the Mishnah says that if that meat or that wine gets mixed in with anything else, if there was an infusion of taste, so then it's going to be asur. But if there was no infusion of taste, so then it's going to be mutter. And now, let's consider the following. And I'm going to read the Ran inside. Again, this is a very basic Ran. This Ran is quoted often in the yeshiva. So the Ran is four lines down. I'm only going to pick my spots here in the Ran. So, and I will hopefully be clear in terms of where we are. The fourth line down, the towards the end of the line, where the word is bolded, Vikasha. Vikasha le Rabusa. The rabbis asked the following question: Heche amin and hacha de imyeh ba menosein tam aser de mashma ha'im ba menosein tam mutter. So from our Mishnah, what do we learn? That if there was an infusion of taste, it's going to be prohibited. But that means that if there was no infusion of taste, if it's just a little bit of the prohibited meat or a little bit of the prohibited wine that falls in, so it's going to be fine because of the concept of bittul. V'han nidarim davisheish lamatirim. But we're talking about a neder. And what's a neder, says the Ran? It is a davisheish lamatirim. Now this is an interesting point, because generally speaking, davisheish lamatirim is like the example by the egg. In the example of the egg, I don't have to do anything. In other words, all we need to do is just wait one day, and then it will transform from being an egg which is prohibited to an egg which is permitted. This is not exactly the same. A neder is a davisheish lamatirin, it's something which will become mutter, but only if I go to a chacham and I say to the chacham, hey, I'm really sorry, I made a neder, I deeply regret it, and the chacham says, did you consider X, Y, and Z? And I say, oh, I didn't consider X, Y, and Z. So you'll get a release from your neder. And if and when you get released from your neder, so then that meat or that wine that fell in is no longer going to be asur. So the Ran quotes his Rebbeim, and his Rebbeim said, anything which is prohibited through a neder qualifies as a davisheish lamatirin. If that's true, so then we're looking at a very simple problem. And that is that if it's a davisheish lamatirin, so the Chachamim should block bittul. And in our Mishnah, sounds like there's no blocking of bittul. As long as there was no infusion of taste, our Mishnah says that everything's fine. Good. This is a question that's asked. Mutter v'hanu darim davisheish lamatirin hu. Now, he makes the case that a neder is a davisheish lamatirin. How does he make the case? K'damrin l'kama beperkano de mena yerek mishum de mitzvah l'ishtalui alayha. So, interesting. He writes that the reason why it's considered davisheish lamatirin is because once you're bound by a neder, it's not that, oh, maybe I should go ask a chacham to get released from my neder. No. It's a mitzvah. It's not that it's a good thing to do. It's good advice. You need to. Meaning, see, if somebody comes over to you and says, I made a neder, you tell them, good, here's what you do now. You go to a chacham, you go to a rav, you go to a beis din, and you have them release you from a neder. It's not a nice thing to do. It's something that you should do. You shouldn't be bound by a neder. You should try to get out of the neder. So therefore, anytime a person's in a neder, the objective is to get out. So now that piece of meat that's prohibited through a neder, based on the fact that the author of the neder is in a requirement to release himself from the neder, therefore the food is called a davisheish lamatirin. Okay. And just reading the end of the question. Okay, and we know that when it's a davisheish lamatirin, so even in a thousand, there's no bittul. In other words, the chachamim block bittul. So v'yesh lamar. So now I'll read the answer here, but then we're going to skip a little bit. But let's get first to his answer, and then we'll get an explanation of his answer. V'yesh lamar dechi amina afilu ba'elaf labatul hani milei min b'mino. The Ran writes, when do we say that davisheish lamatirin is subject to bittul blocking. That's only if the mixture is similar tasting foods. Avahacha ki ketani v'nedarav ba'acher she'eno mino. But over here in our Mishnah, we're talking about where the mixture was an eino mino, dissimilar foods. Do me debate some shenis bashleimo. Look at the example that our Mishnah was talking about. Our Mishnah was talking about an egg that was cooked together with meat. Egg and meat have two different tastes. And that's the example that's discussed in our Mishnah. And in such a scenario, so with the Chachamim did not block bittul. In other words, the Ran is writing that when the Chachamim blocked bittul, that's only by min b'mino. But if it's min b'she'eno mino, the Chachamim did not block bittul. Bittul will occur. Okay. Ad kan. In other words, at that point, that's the Ran's answer. Now, a little explanation. Why should that be? Okay, so I'm going to paraphrase. In other words, if you would like to see it inside, the place to look within this Ran, obviously the Ran writes over here extensively. He really provides a tremendous amount of support to this idea. And if you want to see it inside, really the chief, I'm not going to read it inside, but the chief place to look is starting with, oh, I had it. V'chein nirali is more than halfway down on the Amud. It's the last three words on the line. So I'm sorry, v'kach nirali. Okay, and that's where the Ran basically is going to offer the following explanation. So again, I'm going to not read it inside and say it inside. I'm going to say it outside. But again, as I always do, with strong encouragement, you have an opportunity, please read inside. Hopefully I'm presenting it accurately. But basically, here's how the Ran presents it. Look, as I discussed back in the introduction, we have this principle of min b'mino. If I have similar foods, get mixed up together. And what did I tell you? It's a machlokas tanayim, whether or not there is or there isn't bittul. Rav Yehuda says there is not bittul, and the Chachamim say there is bittul. Okay. Now think about it for just a moment. When we have min b'mino, when we have similar foods getting mixed together, it just happens to be that one's prohibited and one's permitted. So, you see, the mixture of min b'mino is fundamentally different than the mixture of min b'she'eno mino. And the fundamental difference resides in the following. When I have dissimilar foods getting mixed together, and I have so much of one food that it negates the taste of the other food, so then the argument of bittul is a very simple argument. I can't taste the food anymore. Meaning, if I have one drop of milk that falls into a cholent pot, I'm not going to taste the milk. It's not going to provide enough of an infusion of taste, so I'm going to taste the milk. So there, I can easily see, in other words, I can intuitively understand the whole principle of bittul, because I'm not tasting it. Good. So once you have a negation of taste, so therefore, that's subject to bittul. That's the starting point behind bittul. That's the cornerstone of bittul, is that I can't taste it. Good. That's in the case of min b'she'eno mino. But now let's think about it. Let's turn our attention to a mixture of min b'mino, of similar tasting food. So again, I made a cholent and I threw in 9 pieces of meat which were fine and 1 piece of meat which is not kosher. But in other words, the taste of meat are the same. Okay. Now here, let's think about it. In other words, was there a negation of taste? Not exactly. In other words, the one piece of meat that was not kosher went into the pot. Can I taste it? The answer is yes, meaning it tastes the same as the others. So here in such a scenario, so we don't have that cornerstone, that fundamental point of, well, like the drop of milk, that its taste is negated. Here, that meat, that taste of the meat, I'm tasting it. Now, I understand there's a lot of other pieces of meat there, and all those other pieces of meat are kosher, but it's hard to say, I don't taste the non-kosher meat. I do. It just happens to mimic the taste of everything else. This is what's called min b'mino. So here the Ran says, that's why we have a debate between the Tanayim as to whether there is or there isn't bittul. Because unlike min b'she'eno mino, where it's grounded in the idea that the taste is negated, here the taste is not negated. The taste is still there. So we now have a debate. So what's Rav Yehuda's argument? Rav Yehuda's argument is really simple. I'm tasting the non-kosher meat. I understand, I'm also tasting the kosher meat. But I'm tasting the non-kosher meat. So you can't tell me bittul if I'm tasting the non-kosher meat. So Rav Yehuda says it's not subject to bittul. And what's the Chachamim's argument? The Chachamim's argument is, you're right, I know, but when all said and done, one's kosher and one's not kosher. Meaning, I'm still going to argue they're different. I know they're not different in taste, but they're different.
In status.
One's kosher and one's not kosher. So they're different. So even though from a taste standpoint, I can't argue you, but from a different standpoint, they're different. One's kosher and one's not kosher. And so therefore the Chachamim will tell you that even though this is this food, the taste is the same, but because it's kosher and non-kosher getting mixed together, as long as there's a preponderance of kosher over non-kosher, so therefore we're subject to bittul. That's how the Chachamim are going to argue the point of Rav Yehuda. But the Ran now says, beautifully and brilliantly, but here's now where things are going to change. Meaning that Rav Yehuda's got an excellent point. We don't side in terms of the halacha like Rav Yehuda. But Rav Yehuda does have a good point. Rav Yehuda's point is that when two foods are of similar taste, so you can't say that one negates the other. And the Chachamim's counterpoint is, yeah, but one's kosher, one's not kosher. But Rav Yehuda really has an outstanding point. And the Ran says, now let's just imagine that everything is equal. Everything is the same. Meaning I have two foods get mixed together in a pot, and they're exactly the same. Then what? We're all going to agree. Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim, we're all going to agree that there is no bittul. And the Ran says, and that's Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. That's exactly what happens when I have eggs get mixed up with other eggs. Meat gets mixed up with other meat, and the one piece of meat is now prohibited, but in a short amount of time is going to become permitted. So now what do I have in this pot? I have in this pot a undisputable example of min bimino, meaning these two foods now are almost identical. Meaning I know one is usser, but it's only temporarily usser. In a moment's time, in a day, or when I go to a Rav and ask him to get out of my shiloh, so in a moment's time, it too is going to become permitted. And so now what do I have is a mixture of min bimino in the most classic sense imaginable. And the Ran says, that's why the Chachamim are going to agree to Rav Yehuda. Now, I really can't see the difference between them, and that's why it's not going to be subject to bittul, and that's why bittul gets blocked. Good. That's the Ran's explanation of Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin is only going to be problematic. It's only going to block bittul if their foods are similar. Once the foods are dissimilar, now we're back to the Chachamim's opinion. Now we're back to the cornerstone of bittul. If the foods are dissimilar, so now the Chachamim say, right? Everyone would say, taste. Once the taste gets negated, so then obviously there's going to be bittul. Our Mishnah is talking about min b'she'eino mino, and that's why our Mishnah is not bringing up the topic of Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, because Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin is not relevant. It's not applicable when the tastes are dissimilar. Okay, ad kan. That is basically the point of the Ran. Again, see it inside. Hear it again, right? If you want, play back the tape again.
Could you argue that the even in terms of status, in the Talmud Yehuda, they say that it's really not min b'min because of the status is there's a contrast there.
Right. That's again, you see the Ran inside. That's basically what he says. That the Chachamim will tell you that still kosher and non-kosher are dissimilar. Now, it's just not as powerful as the arguing dissimilar tastes. That's the part that really needs, you know, you really need to think about it. Okay, Adkan, that is the Ran. It's the classic Ran in terms of a giving explanation of why the Chachamim block bittul by Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. Okay, we're on the Amud Beis, Nun Beis, Amud Beis. We're starting now with the Gemara Viriminu. The Gemara says, I'm going to challenge you. Because, what did we learn back in the Mishnah? I know we spent a lot of time with that Ran, but for good reason. Let's go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught us that if a person made a neder against milk, he can eat the whey. And Rav Yossi says, no, Asar Menachum, he can't eat the whey, because milk includes in it also a neder against whey as well. Meanwhile, whey, by the way, everyone understand whey, W-H-E-Y. Okay, the Gemara of Reminu Menada Shemaster Bashishim Rav Yossi Matir. The person makes a neder, that's it, he's not having any lentils anymore, he's done with lentils. So he can't eat lentils and he can't eat ashishim. Ashishim, lentils fried with honey. Okay, sounds delicious. He can, but that's also included in his neder as well. And Rav Yossi says, no, it's fine. The neder against lentils is only specific to lentils and doesn't include another variety of lentils or lentils prepared with honey. And the Gemara is bothered by, wait a second, what just happened? Rav Yossi just did a 180. And our Mishnah, a person made a neder against chalav, and that includes milk. Meanwhile, in this brisa, a person makes a neder against lentils, and Rav Yossi says, that's just lentils, but doesn't include honey fried lentils. How do you resolve that? But the Gemara says it's very simple. Lokasha, Markiasre, Basa Durabana Karula Chaba Chaba, Ulukumakuma. So the Gemara says, look, this debate in our Mishnah between the Chachamim and Rav Yehuda, the Chachamim and Rav Yossi, is all just a function of how words are spoken in everyone's community. In the community of the Chachamim, when someone says chalav, he means specifically milk. And when someone says kuma, whey, he means specifically whey. And ba'aso de Rabbi Yossi, l'kuma nami karele kuma, dechaba, karele kuma dechaba. So, and in Rabbi Yossi's community, whey is called kuma dechaba, the way of milk. right, the W-H-H-E-Y of milk, the way of milk. So in other words, again, it's a linguistic issue, and it's just how words are communicated in various communities. That's all. And it comes out, based on this Gemara's explanation, there's actually no debate in our Mishnah. Meaning, it's funny. Our Mishnah makes it sound like we're having a machlokas. We're really not. Everyone's just simply explaining that if you live in a community where milk means milk and it doesn't mean whey, so good. Your neder on chalav won't include kum, it won't include whey. If, however, in your community, if I send someone to the market and say, look, do me a favor, get me some milk, and I come back with whey, and it's, you know, oh yeah, right. that's good. So the so then that's obviously going to be included in your neder. Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Brisa. I know the mina chalav mutar b'kum. Mina kum mutar b'chalav. A person makes a neder on not having milk, so he's allowed to have whey. If a person makes a neder of not eating whey, mutar b'chalav, he's allowed to have milk. Min ha'chalav mutar b'gvina. Person makes a neder not to have milk, he can have cheese. Min ha'gvina mutar b'chalav. Person makes a neder against cheese, he can have milk. Min ha'rotev mutar b'kipa. Person says, that's it, no more gravy for me, so he can have the little pieces of meat. Min ha'kipa mutar b'rotev. If he says he's not going to eat the little pieces of meat, but he can still have gravy. And if he pointed to a particular piece of meat and he said, this is going to be prohibited to me, so then he can't have the meat, the gravy that comes out of the meat, the little chunks of meat that come off of it as well, obviously. In other words, everything of the meat and its derivatives are going to be prohibited. If a person makes a neder, I know this is all repeated, we said this all in the Mishnah. If a person made a neder against wine so he can have any dish made with wine, Amar Konim Yain Zeh, but once he points to a specific bottle of wine, Shena Tom, Menafel Asocha Tavshim, Yesh Bo Benosim Tam, Areza Aser. So as long as there is an Asinas Tam, as long as it infuses taste, so then the dish is going to be prohibited. Good. Ad Kan Divrei HaBraisa. Next Mishnah. Hanodim En Anavim. Let's say a person says that that's it, he's not going to have grapes anymore. Okay, for whatever reason, fed up with grapes, and makes a neder upon himself not to eat grapes. Mutar b'yayin. So he's allowed to drink wine. Wine is not grapes. Now again, obviously, wine is a derivative. It's a product of grapes. But again, we're talking about the world of nedarim. When the person makes a neder against grapes, so the general understanding of such a neder is that it's only specific to grapes. Wine is not going to be prohibited to him. Min hazeis mutar b'shemen. If a person made a neder, that's it, I'm done with olives. Right? I happen to love olives. But the person says, I'm done with olives, so mutar b'shemen, so he's allowed to drink olive oil. So amar konim zeisim v'anavim elu she'eni to'aim. However, let's say he's more expressive and he says, I'm not going to eat olives or grapes these, right? And I know I stress that, but you'll see why in just a moment, right? I'm not going to eat zeifs and va'anavim elu, these, she'eni toim, and I'm not going to taste them. So then, aser behem uveyotze behem. So now, because he was more expressive in his neder, so therefore, not only is he not going to be able to eat the grapes and the olives, but he also won't be able to consume wine and olive oil as well. By Rabbi Bar Chama asks a simple question. Obviously, the contrast is between the first and the second half of the Mishnah. In the first half of the Mishnah, he said grapes, it just means grapes, not wine. In the first half of the Mishnah, he said olives, it means just the actual fruit olive itself, it doesn't mean olive oil. Okay. And in the second half of the Mishnah, because he was more expressive, so therefore it also includes the derivative as well. And the question is, what exactly did he utter? Meaning, if we're going to dissect that phrase that he said in the second half of the Mishnah, what was the key component of the phrase that he said that not only made the grape and the olive prohibited, but also the byproduct as well? So, by Rami Bar Chama, that is exactly Rami Bar Chama's question. What was the trigger? What triggered off the extra component of the neder? Elu dafka, o she'enu to'em dafka. So the two candidates of what triggered off the extra part of the neder is either the word elu, right, these, or eni to'em, I'm not tasting. Meaning, if he just said grapes, it means grapes. But if he said, these grapes, elu, she'eni to'em, then I'm not tasting. So obviously now he's trying to express more. And the Mishnah says that it's going to prohibit the wine as well. But what was the trigger? Okay, any diagnostician will tell you that you're looking for the root cause. So over here, what's the root cause?
Is it specific to those grapes that you're looking at?
Okay, very good. So isagadat chelu dafka shinitom lamali. So akamash. I'm sorry. So the Gemara starts off with a very straightforward argument, and that is, look. If Elu was enough to create the trigger, so then why do I have to say Sheni Toim? Meaning the Mishnah obviously is trying to teach us what's necessary. Sounds like from the Mishnah that the word Elu is not enough, is insufficient. Because then he has to say Sheni Toim, I'm not going to taste it. So the Gemara says, HaKamashwan, Da'afakav, Da'am Sheni Toim, Idam Elu Mitzav Yilalom. But the Gemara says, look, but that argument is not a definitive argument. You could just simply say, look, She'eni Tom is by itself not enough. It's the word Elu which really triggers off the extra neder, the extra component of the neder of the wine. So again, all the Gemara is just simply saying is, from just the wording of the Mishnah, we don't have enough proof. Amar Rava Tashma, so the Rava says, okay, so let's analyze. So, Konein, Peres Ha'elu, Alai, Konein, Hain, Lefi, I'm sorry, Konein, Hain, Lefi, So we learned earlier in the Masechta that if a person makes a neder, these fruit, peres ha'elu alai, and he points to these particular fruits. So what did we learn earlier in the Masechta? So you are not only not allowed to eat these fruit, but any exchanges for the fruit and growth that results from that fruit as well. This is strange, but this is halacha. If, let's say, I point to a particular mango, and I say, this mango is also to me. And then I take the seed out, and I plant the seed, and I create a new tree. With that seed, that's gidulehem. That's the growth that comes from the mango, elu, that was prohibited to me. And the Mishnah taught us that not only is your mango going to be also to you, but that whole tree is going to be also to you as well. Now, what the Gemara is going to now suggest is, look, what was mentioned in the Mishnah? An exchange for that fruit and a growth of that fruit. You know what the Mishnah didn't mention? A product of that fruit. Meaning if I squeezed the juice of that fruit, that's not included in my neder, right? Well, the Mishnah didn't mention it. So that's what the Gemara now is going to try to suggest. Habayotzimehemutr. Anything that comes out of the fruit, a juice that is extracted out of the fruit, that's okay. That's not included in my neder. So the Gemara says, no. Who adin dafil b'yotze mehem aser? Va'adifa leila ashmeinan. The Gemara says, no. That point was so obvious, the Mishnah didn't even need to say that. Meaning, if I made a neder against that fruit, Of course the extracted juice from that fruit is going to be prohibited. That was basic. And the Ran goes on to explain that when the Gemara first presented this argument, the Gemara thought just the opposite. That it was that this point is not obvious. But the Gemara doesn't about face, and the Gemara says, no, that's obvious. So the Mishnah only wanted to give us the less obvious point, because as the Mishnah is the main point of a Mishnah is to express the biggest chiddush. And the biggest chiddush is, not only is the juice that comes out of that fruit going to be asur, but if I exchange that fruit for another fruit, that's going to be asur. If I grow a plant out of the seed of that fruit, that's going to be asur. The Mishnah is giving us the bigger chiddush. So v'ha'adifa le'lashmina dechilufein ki gedulayim dami. That's what the Mishnah is there to teach us. Tashma. Gemara says, okay, once again, let's see. She'eni ochav she'eni toim. I'm not eating it, I'm not tasting it. So, if the way he expresses his neder is any toim, I'm not tasting it. So there, exchanges and growth are permitted. Ha ha yotze mehem asur. Once again, if you read the Mishnah carefully and critically, what it sounds like is that only exchange and growth are going to be permitted. But juice extracted is going to be prohibited. So, and why? Because he says the words "any ochel and any toim." So now it seems like we have successfully concluded that the trigger for juice extracted is any toim. Sounds that way. So the Gemara says, "No, I did the lo nasiv bereisha yotze mehem, lo nasiv nami b'seifa yotze mehem." The Gemara says, "No, from that Mishnah, don't take the Mishnah too literally." Because as the Gemara argues time and again, sometimes the Mishnah constructs itself simply for the purposes of symmetry. Remember, Mishnayos were committed to memory, and the Mishnayos are therefore written in a very symmetrical tone so that you have a nice sing-song to the Mishnah. So, in other words, maybe the truth of the matter is that the juice that's extracted is also going to be permitted, even though he says, "Eini toim bahem." Maybe it's only about the fruit itself, but the juice extracted would be fine. And the only reason why the Mishnah didn't mention it is just to keep in alignment with the first half of the Mishnah. Tashma, Rav Yehuda, Ma'aseh v'Asur, Rabbi Tarfon, Alai, Beitzim, Shenis, Bash, Le'imo. So, Amar lo, Emes, Abiz, Man, Shamar, Basar, Ze, Alai, Shano, Demin, Adav, Rav, Nitar, V'Acher, V'yesh, Bo, Menos, Saint, Tam, Arei, Ze, Asur, Be'elu. I'm sorry, Harei Ze Asur. So the Gemara quotes the first mission we learned this morning. An egg was cooked with meat. He said, this meat is going to be prohibited. And what happened? The meat was cooked together in the same pot with an egg. And what happened? The juice of the meat went out into the egg. And Rabbi Tarfon said, okay, now the egg is prohibited. And what was the key word that was used in a Mishnah? He says, all right, the neder was Bizman Sha'amar Basar Zeh Alai. In other words, he said specifically this meat. Oh, okay, fine. So in other words, the key word seems to be the word Zeh, or a replacement of the word Zeh, Elu. In other words, that seems to be the trigger. So the Gemara says, point conceded, point taken. You're right. Be'elu lo kami ba'elan. The Gemara says, you're absolutely right. The word Elu, it was never even open for our questioning. Didafkahu. The Kimi Bayalan Bishen Otoim. Dafka Olav Dafka. The Gemara says, look, you're right. If I said the word Elu, not only can I not eat the fruit, but I can't eat the derivative of the fruit as well. The juice that's extracted from the fruit is going to be prohibited. What if I don't have the word Elu, but I say She'eni Toim? Tashma, Dag Dagim, She'eni Toim. Asar Bahen, Ben Gedolim, Ben Ketanim, Ben Chaim, Ben Mubushalim. So the Gemara says, okay, let's go to a mission that we learned yesterday. What was the mission that we learned yesterday? A person made a neder against fish, big fish, little fish. So what did we learn yesterday in the mission? He can't eat the fish, but the juice extracted from the fish, right, the brine that comes out of the fish, the oil that comes out of the fish, that's fine. Even though he said, "Eini toim." Okay, so that seems to be indicative of the fact that even though he said the words "any toim," it only refers to the object itself, but not any juice that's extracted. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rava kvar yatza mehem." Rava says, "Look, we could deflect that Mishnah. Maybe that Mishnah is talking about where before my neder, the oil was already extracted out of the fish. Then my neder on the fish is not going to affect the oil that already was extracted. But any future oil or brine that comes off the fish is going to be prohibited. Now again, we're not saying that that is the pshat in the Mishnah, but it could be, and it would be a deflection of the proof. So the Gemara leaves that question unresolved. The Ran at the very end of our sugya says, so on the question of, if he says the word elu, for sure the food and any derivative of that food is going to be prohibited. The Gemara says that's clear. If he says she'eni toim by itself, so the Gemara left that unresolved, and the Ran at the tail end says it's a teku. I'm sorry, the Gemara said teku. The Ran says we're going to be machmir on such a scenario. Okay, just a quick summary. Today's first topic was the neder against milk, whether it includes the whey or doesn't include the whey. The Mishnah's ruling that if I point to a specific food and I say it's usser, the food is usser and any of its taste is going to be usser as well. And the egg that was cooked together with the meat is going to be usser as well. Why isn't this considered a davishesh lamatirin? Short answer, because it's min b'she'eno mino. Longer answer, go back to what we learned earlier this morning in the Ran. And then the Gemara goes on to discuss, if I say grape or olive, the neder is only on grape or olive. If I say these grapes are olives, so then it includes the grape and the olive and any byproduct, which of course means wine and oil. If I don't say the word elu, but I say she'eni toeim, Gemara questions, the Gemara leaves it unresolved. The Ran says we're going to be machmer.